Hello, fellow agents. This is Anthony Pepe, makeup department head for The Blacklist, and you're listening to The Blacklist Exposed on Golden Spiral Media.
Happy summer vacation, Blacklist peeps. Welcome to a special edition of The Blacklist Exposed. I'm Agent Troy Heinrichs.
And I am Agent Aaron Peterson, and tonight we are chatting with New York as we talk with superfan Anthony Pepe. Show notes and other intel for episode 88 of The Blacklist Exposed can be found at theblacklistexposed.com. And I should say, Anthony works on The Blacklist.
Before we get rolling, wanted to let you know that it is time once again for the podcast awards. Yes, this is where we need your help to let the committee know how much you all love our show and your show. Just head on over to podcastawards.com to fill out your nomination ballot. You're going to want to select The Blacklist Exposed in the entertainment category, and then also select Beyond Westworld in the TV and film category. And if you wouldn't mind, just pick the Packers fan podcast in the sports category. That would be fantastic. We're not quite sure how the voting process is going to work because it's changed a little bit this year, but just know Blacklist Exposed for entertainment, Beyond Westworld for TV and film. That would be fantastic if you could do that for us, as we have all these special episodes lined up for you here in July. What do we got up for this week, Aaron?
Well, this week, many of you had asked if we could connect with anyone on the set of The Blacklist. As many of you know, the show is written and edited in Los Angeles, but this is actually filmed and produced in New York City proper.
New York City?
So, what was that?
It was the salsa commercial.
Well, you're so gangster. So tonight we have some behind the scenes conversations with Anthony Pepe. And I keep saying his name real short because I don't want to mess it up, because I feel like there should be a little bit more zing to it. But, you know, I just can't speak proper. But he's the head of the makeup department, correct?
Yes, makeup department.
Yep. And he's going to talk about the process and what goes through it. And he's worked on a ton of other things. So we talk, but we're all over the place. But we're talking about makeup and effects throughout the work that he has done. We do talk about some of your favorite characters and actors on the show, as well as favorite moments in the show, and what went into making those moments a reality, which I think is really fascinating. What did you think now that the interview is completed?
I think you really had some really cool insights, lots of good stuff that we probably were wondering ourselves all these years. And Anthony just opens up and really is a treasure trove of knowledge, especially on how they do certain things like maybe Milton Bobbitt's nose, or how do they do Kaplan with a cheek/head wound? We don't really know what actually happened still. It's really exciting to hear the love that he has for the art form, number one. Number two, the love that he has for the characters that he's working on and the things that he has to put together, and just his love in general for TV and film. I think it's really fantastic listening to some of Anthony's experiences over the years. So you guys are really, really going to enjoy this. It's super fun.
Yeah, it's just great stuff. And he is my spiritual twin, I believe, because we have the exact same love for the exact same kinds of movies. So I automatically love this guy more than Troy, just right off the bat. Like, I would kick Troy off his own show right now. I would.
And I have to say, Anthony listens to the podcast, so I might be out of a job. Anthony's going to have to team up with Aaron.
But then it would just be all kinds of agreement every week. It would just be like, yeah, I like that too. Yeah, like, no, I didn't like that. I didn't like it either. You know, that's not fun. So we do get a lot of, let me rephrase that. Troy gets a lot of Katarina time. So you do get a little bit of mother theory because he is so obsessed with his own theory. But mostly it's just about the effects and stuff. And it's really cool, really interesting. And we do ask the question about Diego's hair. It doesn't really go anywhere, but you get an answer of sorts.
So, yes. There is a department for it, just for his hair.
So without further ado, Troy, take us away.
Anthony, I'm so excited that you're able to come by and spend some time with us here at The Blacklist Exposed. One, because you work on the set in New York, and you are our first New York interview in four seasons of doing the podcast. But two, you're actually a super fan of the podcast itself. So big thanks for listening.
I've been listening to podcasts since I discovered it. I started the show season two, and when I discovered the podcast, I went back and listened to all of the season one episodes. I find it totally fascinating.
I don't like those. I'm not on them.
All right. Well, but still, it's still fascinating that, you know, I can't tell you how many times, because I leave for work at 3 a.m. to get to the city by 5:00. I live upstate New York. and to get to the set by 5:36. So I listened to you guys there and back. And it's so ironic how close you guys are to the answers in the storyline, because I'm already three episodes ahead. So I find it just ironic and funny how close you guys actually come. I can't actually tell you what you got right, but you find out later on. You know what I mean?
Damn it. I thought we were going to get something.
I can get, I don't know. I can't give you anything for the next season because I have nothing. I have no script or anything. So I couldn't even tell you what's happening.
No, you probably shouldn't.
I believe what Anthony is saying is that the mother theory is correct.
I don't.
I'm a subscriber to the mother theory myself. I'll be honest with you.
Stop it.
What?
Stop it.
Yeah, I am. I am. And not from any evidence that I've seen on the show from behind the scenes, but just the way it plays out on the show and then the way Troy talks about it, it makes sense. It totally makes sense. You know, there's one thing actually.
I liked you until this happened.
And then well, there's something. If you go back, the episode where Liz Keene finds Red's secret room and she's talking to the cameras, I forget which episode. It was way back, like either season two or three.
Two.
When she finds his secret apartment. There's okay. There's a shot of her, and on the shelf behind her in a book, there's a book about sex change operations.
What?
Yeah, in the actual bookcase. Now, that has nothing to do with like what was placed there. It could just be a prop, but it was just ironic. There's actually a shot of it, and you could see that it's like it's about surgery, you know.
Just to confirm, you don't actually know the answer, because I don't want anyone to ever hear what you say and assume that means there's no answer.
I don't know the answer. I get the scripts like literally days before we shoot them.
There you go.
So there is no answer. This is my own personal theory.
I'm still convinced John heard about this theory and he's just putting crap in there like that to mess with my brain.
I think that's a possibility too.
I hope the whole Jilly scene when she's like reaching in his pants, it's like, oh, what do we have here? Like, son of a.
Well, there's all kinds of little clues that I think just recently I'm so bad. I know the episodes, but I keep forgetting them. The episode with the flashback, Mr. Kaplan, the origin story, the scene where Katarina comes in to give her the girl and there was a fire.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't see it on camera, but you kind of see it, but she has burns all over her back. So does that mean that those burns basically are Reddington's burns later on that we have never seen since season one? Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But then people would argue the fact that, well, if she had plastic surgery to change into a man, why didn't she get that fixed?
Exactly. You know? Well, maybe that's one of those like poetic things that Reddington would do where, you know, something to keep. Like, why is the bunny still around?
That's a good point. It's a memoir.
Yeah.
The bunny back in the box.
It reminds him. It reminds him of a horrible time. Keeps his mind in check, so to speak.
Totally.
I could see that. I don't, but I could see that.
Well, I don't. I mean, there's other. I don't think it's a definitive route. I think it's a good option. And Spader has been known to do quirky things like that with his previous projects, like Crash and Secretary and things like that. So it's not above him. Like even the Alan Shore on Boston Legal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, true. Like, so he's always played those quirky characters. So it's not above him to play, you know, a transsexual.
No, you know what I mean? It sure wouldn't be. I think he'd probably enjoy it. In fact, I think right now he's like, just can we just change it? Even if it's not that, can we just make it that? Because that would be fun.
Right.
I could see him doing it. Well, Anthony, one thing I always ask anytime I interview anybody is what made you decide that you want to... Well, first, tell people what you do, specifically, how you do it.
I'm the makeup department head for The Blacklist. I'm a makeup and special effects artist. I've been doing makeup for about 21 years now. I've done everything, feature films, television, commercials, music videos. Some of the more recent films I've worked on were the second Hunger Games movie, Catching Fire.
Did you touch Jennifer Lawrence at all, at her head?
No, I met her. I met her. I worked under V. Neil, the makeup department head at the time. I also worked on like the Amazing Spider-Man movies here in New York, and you know, not in a department head capacity, but you know, as part of the makeup teams. And television, I've bounced around a lot on all the shows in New York. And then right about the time I moved upstate, because I lived in New York City, I moved upstate. About 6 months later, I get the call to come work on The Blacklist full time. So now I commute every day to the city. So I've been with the Blacklist now since season two.
Wow. So what made you, when you're, was it a moment when you were a kid? Was it a moment at some point in your life where you wanted, you knew, I want to do this. This is what I want to do with my life.
No, originally my plan was to be a Walt Disney animator. I went to college for animation and illustration. I wanted to be a cartoonist. That was the whole dream. And college didn't work out. It was one of those things where I was like, you know, I had one of those life-changing moments once I got to college, because high school, you're kind of in that circuit of like, okay, we're all going to be successful artists and we're all going to do what we want to do. And then when you get to college, the world opens up and you're like, you know what? This is bullshit. I'm going to go and do something as opposed to being a slave working on a cartoon desk for Mickey Mouse for the rest of my life. So I went to makeup school as a goof. I went down to Orlando, went to a makeup school for 14 weeks and figured, hey, come back to New York, start working on some movies. I worked on a couple of trauma movies. And then,
yeah, I love those.
Yeah, it's as bad as they look, believe me.
I love them. I don't care.
There's something about them, but they're just it's a steep learning curve, real mm-hmm. fast. You know, you're like, okay, this is how movies are made, really? Then you know, you slowly but surely, you start making contacts and you work your way up the business. And I joined the makeup union about 13 years ago, and have been doing it ever since.
And you've got a pretty extensive resume, but the one thing, I mean, outside of the fact that you touched Jennifer Lawrence's head or you saw her, which is really cool.
That's as far as it got.
I'm changing it up, right? I'm making it a little more special. Outside of that, I've got a little bit of a crush on her.
First thing that threw me about Jennifer Lawrence when I first met her, how tall she is.
Is she like 6 foot, something like that?
She's tall. Like, it threw me for a loop. Like, I'm about 5'7", so I'm short for a guy. But when I saw her, I was like, holy, she's tall. You know, you don't expect it. It's the last thing you would have thought of.
Is she genuine? Is it genuine?
Yes.
She seems
really nice. As a person, absolutely. Yes. Yeah. She was very nice to me. We spoke briefly. Yeah, she was mad cool.
That's great. And the other thing is Spider-Man. I have to ask about Spider-Man. What is that like? Spider-Man's my all-time favorite character. Sorry, Red Reddington fans, but Spider-Man trumps all. What was that like working on the Spider-Man movies? I don't really care about the critical reception. I like those movies.
Right.
I genuinely like those movies. So what was that like? What was that whole process like for you?
Well, it was surreal because it was after doing all these indie films and low budget films and things like that, to be on like a Hollywood blockbuster type movie, mm-hmm. to see the stunts and just to see the scope of it all was mind blowing. The biggest thing for me was I worked under John Caglione Jr., who's famous for Dick Tracy and all that. And I worked for a number of makeup artists, and they'd rebuilt Times Square for the second Spider-Man movie. They'd rebuilt Times Square somewhere in Long Island. And just to walk out there and see Times Square in the middle of a field and Jamie Foxx in the full electro makeup and Spider-Man swinging from these cranes and being thrown and them flipping buses and cop cars like over and over and over was just like, it was unbelievable. I was speechless. Like, I'd never seen anything like it in my life. You know, I had actually seen a city bus get rolled over and they're like, cut, bring out another bus, cut, do it again, do it again, do it again. So we lost like four buses, but it was just fun. It was just so much fun to just be in that. Even if I didn't do one damn thing that day, even if I just touched up one background actor, just to be there in that vibe was just so surreal and so amazing.
Yeah, the big question is that people talk about special effects, and I had a friend who completely yelled at me for saying special effects. It's visual effects. It's not special effects.
He's right. He's absolutely right about that.
Is there one? Is it different? Is two different departments, or is it really just nomenclature change?
There's actually three departments. It's visual effects, which is the computer, CGI, anything like that. Backgrounds, painting in the, you know, cities, whatever. Special effects is actually practical when they do like rain, snow, squirting blood, anything like that. Squibs on the actors. That's all special effects. My thing is basically special makeup effects, which falls under prosthetics and monsters, whatever, wounds, things like that. So he's not that far off. There's three of them.
I knew the difference, Troy. Did you know the difference?
I knew there were two. I didn't know there were three. So the makeup is interesting because I thought the makeup would fall under the visual effects side of it. So that's pretty cool.
Do you know what a squib is, Troy? Do you know what a squib
is? Yeah, that's like the bullet thing.
Exploding bullet, yep. Anthony, how, for people that don't quite understand how that works, when you're doing makeup on an actor, how long is that process? Like, what's the process like for doing that?
Well, it really depends on the type of makeup I'm doing. If I can give you an example from The Blacklist, episode 401, Esteban, right? He had the eyes. He took out his eyes and did the clicking noises. The mm-hmm. blind guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks for that.
Thank you.
Nightmares.
So something like that was a half hour process. Basically, I meet with the actor. I fit him with these prosthetic pieces. We glue them on. We color them in. We blend them. And he's good to go. And then I'm on set covering it all day. If I had to do something like an old age makeup or something more extensive, it could take upwards up to like 4 or 5 hours, depending on the length of makeup. If you're going to do something like from the X-Men movies, like Beast or Mystique or something like that, you're looking at half a day easily. But you also have a team of makeup artists coming in. So the scale and length of the makeup really hinges on the design itself. On The Blacklist, they don't give me that kind of luxury. I don't have hours to do a makeup. I pretty much have half hour or less. Anything over that, they look at me like, okay, how can we change it? Or how can we write this out? You know?
Mm-hmm.
The biggest one I remember, it was 404. It was Gaia? Or was 403? It was 404. It was the one where Aram wouldn't shoot the helicopter down, so Cooper did it.
Yep.
He had that son who had that really deformed face. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They showed it for like a minute. We had done this whole thing about makeup where we were going to do it practical and set it up. And I had designed this whole like lymph node, elephant man type thing. But unfortunately, the kid they had hired wasn't really ready to wear that kind of makeup. He was a young boy. He was not really seasoned, which I guess most kids aren't in the film industry, but he wasn't really ready to wear the makeup. So we ended up having to do it with computers instead. They scratched the makeup completely, but we had done numerous tests and we had gotten everything approved. And then finally it was like, you know what? The kid's just not going to wear it. So let's just do it with computers. So my job basically blends a lot with visual effects as well. Visual effects actually helped me with the Esteban makeup, where they actually took out his eye sockets. So my makeup covered his eyelids, but I can't remove his eyeball. So visual effects comes in and kind of scoops it out, if you will.
Magic.
Yeah, the VFX guys on Blacklist are amazing. They're really good. Brian Kupchevic, he's amazing. He does amazing work on that show. Out to see and everything like that, all the little effects he'll do. Most of the stuff that they do with the computers on that show, you'll never even see, but they're there.
So it is a partnership between you guys, because you would think that you classic people like you doing the makeup stuff are like, oh, computers are ruining the world, but you guys actually do team up, and in that case, you're actually okay with it, because
absolutely. I believe that the computers are not taking over the industry. We were all thinking that when Terminator 2 came out and Jurassic Park, we were all like, oh boy, this is it. We're done. No more big monster movies. And that's not, you know, that has happened. The monster movies are becoming more visual effects, which is like, look at the Wolfman movie. It was a perfect opportunity to do completely practical effects, Rick Baker and all that. But then they went and CGI'd the whole thing and it tanked. So it's one of those things where I believe the computer is just another tool in my arsenal, as opposed to being a complete replacement. You know, if you see the movie Species back in the day, mm-hmm. it's terrible because it's all CG. There's no makeup. So it kind of ruins it, you know, in a way. And the computer hasn't reached the level of creating what I call the soul of a human. If you look at a person in real life and you're wearing makeup, you can actually see the soul behind their eyes. There's a life in their eyes. Computers haven't replicated that yet.
Agreed.
They've done their best. Like if you watch like Tron Legacy or any of these movies now where they'll CGI the person younger or older or whatever, even in Westworld, they do that. But there's something about it that's slightly off, you know, just that little tiny bit that's slightly off. So it's a tool. It's not a complete replacement as of yet.
Let me ask you a question in terms of makeup itself. So when I was a little kid, my mom to desensitize me to a degree so I could watch horror movies and I could watch certain things. She really wanted to take the reality out of it, so to speak. So like Friday the 13th, those kind of movies, because I love, I've always been an avid fan of horror movies, which I'm sure you've done plenty of monsters in your day.
I have, definitely. And I'm a big fan of horror movies too.
Yeah. Simpatico. Well, what she did was she always made me watch like behind the scenes things, how makeup effects are done, how they're applied, how these people aren't really dead, da, 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 da. Do you think, because now you work in this environment and you have for a very long time, does that take you out of it to a degree when you're watching a movie? Do you not, do you have a hard time watching a movie or a TV show without seeing the flaws or without seeing the makeup aspects?
If it's a good makeup, I don't notice it. The idea is that I don't notice the makeup. There are some movies just even recently where the makeup stands out so much you just can't not look at it. Now, to the average moviegoer, they're not seeing those edges or they're not seeing the color differentiation, but I automatically pick it up. Mm-hmm. So it does become a little bothersome sometimes where I'm watching a show and it's like, oh, what are they thinking? You know, and it's like, there's nothing you can do about it. You're like, and then I realize, like, even on The Blacklist, it happens where I get 15 minutes to do a makeup because of scheduling or the actor wasn't available. I don't get to do a life cast or make a custom prosthetic. So I have to make a generic piece. Like, we just recently had an episode near the end where Samar comes in and grabs this guy by the cojones and he has this whole burn on the side of his face. So that was not even planned. Like, let's just put a burn on him and we just throw it together. And it's like, okay, we got to do this real quick, quick, quick. And then when you watch the show, I see every single little flaw. But my wife, who's my litmus paper, she's like, nope, it looks fine. You're good. You're good. Everything's good. So it does become a hassle after a while. But sometimes I get, you know, I can watch a movie and be like, oh, you know what? Forget it. And if I watch it a couple of times, you know, you don't even notice it anymore.
Does your wife call you out when you get it wrong?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. She's a nurse. So every time I do a wound or any sort of illness, I run it by her first. And she'll be like, no, he's too pale. No, that's too yellow. No, it wouldn't bleed like that. So she's really good with that.
Oh, my God. My mom's a nurse. She does the exact same thing. True story.
Yeah, it's perfect. It's a great it's a great thing in my arsenal.
The follow-up from there would be, so you see these flaws and things of that nature. How much do you have to then work with maybe even direction or camera setup or scene setup to say, hey, you know what? We didn't quite get this. We didn't quite get that. So if you shoot this a certain way, do you get any input on that to kind of cover up any imperfections because of the time crunch?
Well, the time crunch is the biggest factor for the entire cast and crew. We have 10 months to shoot 22 episodes and we shoot them every 9 days. So we are scrambling. And plus the scripts can come as quickly as the day before we start shooting. So thankfully, our crew is one big family, and the DPs like Saad Mustafa and Mike Caracciola, we get together and I'll be like, okay, listen, they'll set up the lights, they'll do everything. I bring the makeup out there. They will give me the luxury of saying, okay, I got to tweak this. I got to fix this. Our ADs are good. If I see a problem, one prosthetic stands out to me. It was 220 or 221. It was Quan Zhang. And it was this guy who was robbing graves with Asian statues and making like Asian brides and all this stuff. It was a really weird episode. But he had all these weird keloid scars all over the back of his head. And I remember chasing them every single day. And one day we were outside and it was bright sunlight right on top of him. I'm like, listen, is there anything we can do to kind of diffuse this? Because no matter what, if it's in bright sunlight, it's going to look like makeup. There's no way around it. You know, I don't want to have to go in with the VFX and tweak anything. Can we do it right now? And 9 times out of 10, they're pretty good. But that also that 1 time out of 10 where it's like, nope, there's no time. Let's go. Move on. Moving on. Don't sweat it so much. And you have to kind of pick your battles, you know. So if I see something that's off that only I see, I can live with it. But if I see something that people are like, hey, man, there's something wrong with that. We got to fix it. So it's kind of a never ending battle.
Wow. That's crazy. You got a great job.
I like to think so. It's fun. I mean, I enjoy it immensely. It's been very good to me. And I've met a lot of cool actors. Just being on The Blacklist alone, I've met most of my childhood actors, and it's been so much fun. Ron Perlman was one of my favorites when we did the Luther Braxton episodes back in season 2.
Oh, he seems like a great guy.
He was the coolest cat you ever met. And the funny thing is, it's like,
immediately they were like, we want to put him in these scars and we want to put him in all this makeup. And I was like, listen, you know, Ron Perlman's kind of known for wearing a shitload of makeup. Mm-hmm. Everything he does, he wears makeup. How about in this one, we just change the color of his goatee and give him a tiny, tiny little scar on his cheek. That's it. Because he's so badass that no one could ever touch him. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's how we were kind of thinking. And he was totally cool with it. He was all ready to be plastered up and all this burns and everything and half his hair shaved and everything. We're like, no, let's not make him a caricature. You know, we have Ron Perlman here. Let's use Ron Perlman. So it's fun. There's so many cool actors we've had on the show so far. And I'm sorry when they die. I always miss, like, David Strathairn was the saddest one we ever had to kill. And he never gets to wear the blood and the gore and everything. So when he gets thrown out of the plane and smashed into the house in wherever it is, like Netherlands or something, we broke his neck and we broke his arm and blood all over. And he was ecstatic. He loved every minute of it, you know, but it was sad to see him go.
That's pretty awesome. So does that mean that you were you involved when they blew up? What was his name?
Alan Alda.
Alan Alda.
Yeah, I was. I mean, technically, you never saw the head. So all it really was a special effects where they just fired blood against the glass. So there was no meat. There was no bone or like you just saw all that blood. So I was there. And funny thing about that, when the effects guys blasted the blood, it was in the orange box, you know, the famous orange box. Mm-hmm. So when they blasted it, James is standing on the other side of the glass. The force of the blood had kind of opened the door from the top, and the blood just rained down all over James.
Oh, no.
And believe me, his costume is very, very custom made. Yeah. So, you know, the wardrobe department had a field day with effects guys, but it was funny as hell. But, you know, James hates the blood. He comes next every time I have to put a drop on him, whenever it's, you know, the bruise or like little blood out of his ear. And then he looks at me with such disdain and he's just like, ugh, you represent everything that's wrong with this business, Anthony.
I could see. I mean, that is messy for a lot of actors. And I'm sure when you've probably been doing it as long as he has, you know, that kind of stuff becomes, I don't know what the word would be, but I could see that probably.
Totally. I mean, he does it. It's part of the job. He gets it, but he just doesn't like it, you know. But I have yet to actually put the burn scars on him again, the ones from season one. Like, we haven't done that at all.
Do you guys keep that? I assume because you have a mythology, so you have to keep certain things for long periods of time. Do you actually, like, have the scars basically held behind somewhere so that if you ever do need to reapply them, you have exactly where they go and what they look like?
No, no. All I have is the reference from the actual episode from 122, whatever it was, the last episode. And I have photos of it from the season one, because I wasn't part of season one, so I don't have the actual materials or the actual products. I have to recreate it. So if someone comes, if they decide one day to show his back again, you know, I'm up to build a new set of burn scars that have to kind of look the same, but, you know, no, the only people that are going to notice it are you guys, because no one's going to remember episode 122 and then something in season five. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I beg to differ.
There's a lot of people out there that'll remember.
True. But those are the people I have to worry about. John Q. Public, you know, the diehard fans, I kind of like have to say, hey, guys, listen, you know, we're busting our asses. So what we get out there is what we get out there. You know, he's got burns on his back. Here are the burns. Done. Mm-hmm. If they're not the exact same match of what you saw back in season one with the certain lighting and the way it was shot, you know, that was years ago already.
Yeah, you try to get it as close as you can.
The only thing I have saved so far is Leonard Call's missing fingers. Those I really love doing. Those were great. That guy was such a good guy. I had to tape his fingers to his palms. And since he's not dead, I keep anybody who's not dead, I keep their stuff just in case. Because Yabari, the guy from season two, the African guy, mm-hmm. he had the burned ear.
So I learned my lesson, because in 201, that first scene when we first came back, Reddington's in the jungle and he blows up the compound and everything like that. He's got the burned ear. And I'm like, okay, good. He's done. It's over. Then, of course, we come to the Earl King episode with the auction, and there's Yabari again. Well, shit, I already threw away the ear. So I learned my lesson, you know? Mm-hmm. Keep everything until they're actually dead on the show.
That's crazy. I guess
that's the big question. Is there, like, documentation? Do you have to take pictures, write down certain...
Yeah, we have what's called...
compound or that compound?
Absolutely. We have what's called continuity, and I have reams of photos and books and everything of, like... Okay, this is what he looked like. This is what wrestler looked like today. Wrestler gets back in season two, we were beating him up every other episode. A bruise here, blood here, scratch here. So I was going, okay, he's got a bruise here. He's got it for 3 days. He's got to carry this through. Timelines of the injuries. The biggest one we had was season two again. Wrestler 206. It was the Mombasa. Was it called Mombasa Cartel? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
With the taxidermy in the woods and the guy who played Lurch. You know, it was the weird one with the mom and the guy in the tub and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Soapy Giant episode. Yeah,
Soapy Giant episode, yes. Wrestler gets tagged in the ear with a tag. So now, me being a realist, I'm like, okay, well, if we tag him, that means he's got a puncture in his ear. That means in episode 207... he's got to have some sort of injury remarking from the last episode, because the show technically doesn't – it has no real timeline. You guys have talked about that. There is no real timeline. Okay, this is the next day, or this is the next week, or this is a month from now. You know, it doesn't say that. So there are certain episodes where, like, okay, we're playing this as if they literally got back to the war room doing the – okay, now you're off to do another gig. You know what I mean? So it's like back and forth, or sometimes it's like, oh, it's months ahead. Like, baby Agnes grew up so fast, you know, it's like, so we have to kind of keep the continuity and the timeline of the injuries or the makeups throughout the whole show. And I still have the stuff from season two and season three and season four.
One important, you brought up wrestler, and it's very important. Tori Melchin, if you're listening, and this is for you, are you the person in charge of making sure his hair never moves? Or is that you?
I've heard you guys talk about this a million times, and I laugh every single time. There is a hair department head.
Like, so just for his hair? Just for Diego?
No, there is a hair person. Vanessa Sims does the hair for the show, so she's in charge of everybody's hair. I'm in charge of everybody's face. I am in charge of face, hands, anything skin. Anything hair is the hair department. And Diego pretty much has his own style. The hair department, they cut him, he styles it himself, and you're right, it never moves.
It doesn't.
It absolutely never moves, but it's a good look. It works for him.
No, hey, he's a handsome fella.
You should see when he comes in the morning before he goes to the works. I mean, he looks a lot different in the sense his hair's all shaggy and everything. So the sculpted wrestler look is definitely a character choice.
Well, it's delightful. I mean, really, it's very impressive. The guy can be running against a hydraulic engine, and I still don't think his hair would move. He could be caught in a jet stream, and his hair is still like, I got this.
Yeah, I remember the episode where we had him dragging on a – it was the one with the kids in the woods, the Kenyon family from season two. And the dirty boys and with the lost boys mm-hmm. in the woods.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And wrestler gets captured and he's dragged behind an ATV vehicle. And I had to like mess him up and dirt and everything like that. And I'm like, should we mess up your hair? And he goes, do we have to? I'm like, no. All right, let's move on.
That's fantastic.
That's awesome.
Well, I'm just curious, like, what's the hardest thing you've had to do for the show? I mean, you had Kaplan this season with the whole getting shot in the face slash head. Is that the hardest, or has there been something harder?
Technique-wise, that wasn't hard. The hardest part about Kaplan was the decision. The thing is, like, I don't get the arc. I get the scripts. So I don't know what's happening the next episode down the line. Once in a while, the producers will be like, okay, listen, this is what's happening 3 episodes from now. So you got to kind of get this ready. Get this started now. But I don't know where it's ending. So... When I read that Susan or Kaplan is getting shot in the head, in the face, where is she getting shot, guys? Because now it comes down to what am I going to do when it comes to a practical standpoint? They say all it said in the script was Reddington shoots her in the face. I'm like, okay, we're in the face, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, well, let's do something on the side of her head. And she has a metal plate in her head, and it ricochets and goes through her cheek. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, where the fuck did she get a metal plate in her head? And I don't know until much later, you know, when I actually read the script. I'm like, oh, that makes sense now. So the Johns are like that. John, Bokenkamp, and Eisendrath, where they know all the secrets, but they only divvy out a little bit of information at a time. It's a need-to-know basis, which makes my job hard because now I'm thinking, okay, if I'm going to put a bullet through this woman's cheek, is it going to heal? Where is it going to heal? She's out in the woods. How is it healing? What is the hunter using to make it heal? And the biggest thing is, like, if Kaplan is going to play on for the rest of the show or the rest of the season, possibly into season 5, season 6, season 7, whatever, what is now there? Is there a scar? Is there some sort of like bullet wound? What are we actually seeing? And no real decisions could get made. I had to come up with a bunch of different drafts for them. I actually gave them 4 different versions of Kaplan with varying degrees of injury, where she was shot and how it affected her face. Like, we had one design where half of her cheek was her cheek was completely blown out. So it was like, it would be all very similar to Gary Oldman in Hannibal, where, remember, where he was like, yeah, all screwed up in the face, like, yes, just skin grafts and everything like that. Mm-hmm. But then we'd have to explain, where did these skin grafts come from? We know the hunter didn't do it, you know? So it's like, what, he'd take a piece of skin off of her ass and stick it to her face? Like, we don't know. So there's no real science where these wounds are coming from. I always use the same excuse for Diego. It's like, Diego and Megan have been beaten up so many times on this show that literally their faces would be a mass of scars at this point, you know, but we can't do that. So suspension of disbelief has to come into play when it comes to injuries on television. You know, in a film, you can do it. You have 2 hours to tell your story. You can go from point A to point B. Mm-hmm. On television, by next week, they got to be cleaned up, ready to go for the next episode. You can't start carrying over injuries from the previous episode, because then the people who just join in are going to like, what the hell happened to his head?
Mm-hmm.
You know, did I miss something? And that's going to screw people up. So in our world, in the Blacklist world, and most television shows, injuries heal very fast. They have some of the best doctors. That's our excuse. They have the best doctors, best plastic surgeons, and we can get through it. But going back to Kaplan, we finally, and Susan was great. She worked with me on this because Susan doesn't want to wear a shitload of makeup. She doesn't want to be made into look like a monster. And I had shown her the drafts, and some she was happy with, some she felt that were like a little over the top. And one thing about this show, we're not trying to make it over the top in the sense that when you watch it, Susan gave such a beautiful performance. I don't want you to be staring at her cheek the whole time. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we basically came down to it once she was patched up and hiking, you know, doing the Incredible Hulk, the Bruce Banner walk down the highway thing. We had decided that she was just going to have a very diminutive scar that would show that there was something there, and then her hair would cover it the whole time. Now, as far as the hair piece, the thing that showed the wound on the back of her head, that was an afterthought. What I had originally proposed and was a go was that Kaplan, being such a practical person, when she had got shot the first time, by the guy who broke into the pawn shop when she was with her girlfriend back mm-hmm. in the past.
Mm-hmm.
When she got shot in the head and she's inserted and she wakes up and she's crying and everything like that, we had decided that Kaplan would shave her head bald, because if she's going to take care of this wound, it seems impractical to have all this hair around it. You know, you'd want to keep it short and tight and cover it. And then we can introduce the Kaplan that we know today, Susan Blomart's character, wearing a wig. So when she reveals to the cop, the originally in I hope I'm not losing you guys. I know you guys are fans, so I'm just talking
absolutely
straight up. Okay. So when she's in the trailer and the cop knocks on the door and says, hey, what are you doing here? Blah, blah. She's supposed to pull off her entire wig and she'll be bald with a wound. You know what I mean?
Oh.
And that would have been like a holy shit moment, you know?
Yeah.
We had no idea it was a wig all that time. And it was a good go for a while. There's actually footage of it where we had shot it, but then they had decided to change it and go just to this hair piece bit where she pulls off a chunk of hair and there's the wound there.
So, but that's basically, you know, how a decision it was the whole season I spent figuring out how we were going to do Kaplan's makeup. It was such a pain in the ass, but it got done and it looked great and we were all happy with it.
I think it actually might play better this way because it is, I don't know. I feel like it would play better this way because that might be too dramatic a change, maybe.
True. Very true. I mean, it's the same reason why Reddington keeps his hair very short, because James had said that, because James has long hair. You know, if you've seen him in The Office, his hair grows. Like, he comes in every beginning of the season full head of hair, and they shave him down. But James had said that Reddington wouldn't have the time to go get haircuts. You know, Dembe is not cutting his hair. So the easiest thing to do is just take a buzzer and clip it. So I had figured, like, maybe Kaplan would do the same thing because she's such a practical person too. Why would she mess around with this ointment on her head and trying to, you know, heal her wound as opposed to like what any doctor would do with a head wound where they would shave you?
So that's his character choice, I guess. I don't know why. I just always assume it's a question I never asked anyone or looked up or anything. But I guess I always assumed that the reason is just because he's aging, and most actors, you know, it just seemed like a more sensible choice. If his
no, I agree. But yeah. I mean, James has a great head of hair. So it was one of those things where it's like Reddington wouldn't have the time. James is very, very meticulous about the characters, you know, down to what color handkerchief he has. Like, everything you see with Reddington on camera is the writers and James making every single decision, you know, and it's perfect because James sells it every time. So same thing like the hair, you know, he buzzes his hair because Reddington, why would Reddington get a haircut, you know?
That's a pretty.
He's always moving around.
It's a pretty strong choice for an actor, though. You know, because many actors, I mean, their looks are somewhat part of the sale for them, career wise. You know, so that's actually taking vanity out of it to a degree. And
James, I wouldn't say is a vain person.
No,
James
he didn't seem
one like of those people. Like, if you look at any of his projects, it's not about what he looks like; it's about his performance. So, I mean, it would never be a situation. Like, I remember in Boston Legal, he'd like be in drag or be in a flamingo costume, or in Lincoln, he'd be under all this fake hair, or in Stargate or whatever. So the look of the character, every actor on our show has a definitive say on what their look is. Like Megan's scar on her wrist, Samar's look, you know, Cooper, everything like that. They all have an idea of what their character should look like. And it's up to me to work with it and make it a reality. You know, and James is very meticulous about it.
God, Stargate. If you really want to see a contrast in performances, that's a good watch Blacklist and then go watch Stargate. It's like polar opposite.
And then you could polish it off with Mannequin.
I love Mannequin. Hey,
I love Mannequin.
Mannequin's great.
I love Mannequin. And let me tell you, the day Andrew McCarthy came to set to direct the first time, I had a moment. I geeked out moment where I'd seen both of them together, and I was like, it's Mannequin right there in front of me.
And Less Than Zero. I mean, so it's like all the way across the board. I keep telling.
See, when I was a kid, so Less Than Zero was out of my way. Like, I was out of my wheelhouse. I was growing up on Mannequin and Pretty in Pink. So I was like, I never saw Less Than Zero until I was older. So I didn't grow up with it as much. But it was cool just to see them both together in the same room. Like, oh my God, you know, geek out moment.
That was actually pretty cool because they're my grandfather, stupid story, but my grandfather took me to see Platoon 10 minutes in, 15 minutes in. My grandpa says, no, we're not watching this because, you know, it's F-bomb.
Right.
So we leave the theater and he's like, we're going to see something else. And I'm just depressed because I want to see Platoon. And so what else is playing? Mannequin had just come out because Platoon was playing. It was Oscar season, I think, if I remember right. This was one of the first times I ever saw James Spader in a movie. And so we went and saw Mannequin and fell in love with Kim Cattrall and Andrew McCarthy and James Spader. It's a weird, weird coincidence. Platoon led me to James Spader.
But Platoon is more of a, like, I think Mannequin is more of an adult movie than Platoon.
Well, it's,
I mean, there's
it's
a lot
the
of
language.
Sex jokes in Mannequin.
Yeah, it was the language. My grandpa was not a fan of language, of any any kind of language. And so there was a lot of those kinds of movies that Spader did that I really got hooked on. He was also, what was that? The New Kids, I think was the name of it. That was a really, like, low-budget, really cool movie that he did that I always thought was really fun. He was a fun actor in the 80s. Yeah, you should go find. I know, I remember it because Friday the 13th director was involved. Sean Cunningham was the director.
And, okay.
Yeah, and he was, I don't remember what he played. I think he was the villain, if I remember right. But
well, he seems like he always played the villain.
In the 80s, he definitely, yeah, he got stuck in that.
Totally.
It was Sean Cunningham. It was Lori Loughlin was in that, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
The New Kids?
Yep.
Wow, yeah. Lori Loughlin. I haven't heard that name in ages.
Yeah. She was in Secret Admirer, right, with Kelly Preston. Yep. Oh, boy. Now I'm getting off track. All right. Sorry.
We tend to do that.
We do.
Movie buffs tend to do that.
We do. So what's the hardest thing you ever had to make?
The hardest thing I've ever had to do.
I do. Yeah. I'm sorry. You talked about Blacklist, but I mean overall. Like
overall.
All the projects you've had to do.
I don't know. That's kind of a loaded question. I got to think about that for a second because there are some jobs where it was mostly like a time factor where I was out of time, or some jobs where the makeup didn't work right. I remember a lotto. I did a New York Lotto commercial once where this guy's playing a prank on his friend where all these aliens come invading New York City, all these white giant aliens.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd walked in, it was 30 makeup artists. And for some reason I went in to do the job, but all of a sudden I got hired. I was elevated to the status of leading the troops. And I was like, okay, I got to teach all these makeup artists, because all the makeup artists they had hired were not effects makeup artists. So they had no idea how to make alien makeups. So we had 30 bodybuilders and we just had to like ghetto rig this whole setup of white masks and white body paint and silicone and black eyes and all these things like that, just to kind of make them look somewhat like an alien. It was a hard job because it was a mad dash scramble and we only had one day to shoot it. And it was near the beginning of spring, so the sun was still going down early. It was just, I remember it being a madcap dash of like, everybody get makeup on. I don't care what it looks like. Just go, 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 go. And then at the end of the day, we had found out that these bodybuilders had all this peach fuzz on their chests and their backs. So the makeup we had put on them had actually stuck to the hair. Mm. So we had to sit there for hours with tiny, tiny little scissors and razors and slice off all the hair because you couldn't pull it off. It's what you call a mechanical lock. When hair gets embedded in silicone, it locks. It does not come out. So you have to kind of like either rip off the hair or cut it off. So it was that was a hard job. I remember that being a hard job.
Oh man, that sounds awful.
It was pretty awful. I mean, in the payoff is kind of like, you know, you see the commercial. I know the commercial's on my website, and it's like, it's cute, you know, it's 30 second spot for Lotto, but it was a nightmare. It was an absolute nightmare to shoot.
Do you ever get actors that, and please don't name names because we don't we're not that kind of show. But do you ever get actors through the course of what you do that? Because I keep thinking about it, and when you're in like a latex mask or something for a long period of time and you're letting it sit and you're letting it take form or mold, I assume it can be very claustrophobic. Do you ever have actors who just can't do it? It's too
absolutely
difficult?
Absolutely. I've had actors completely freak out, and they won't do it. They don't care. Their agents get involved. The production gets involved. They just won't do it. And you can't really tell some – I've had some A-listers be like, absolutely not. You know, you're not doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, whatever you want. I'm not here to fight you. I'm telling you what I was hired to do. This is above my pay grade. I'm here to do the job, but I'm not here to tell you to do the job. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's one of those situations where you feel like an ass because you're standing there with all this stuff that they hate you and they hate the stuff you brought. And it's just like, I just work here, guys. I don't know what to tell you. You guys should have had a meeting, maybe. So it's unfortunate. It happens sometimes when production, because I believe production is a completely different beast as opposed to the crew.
Mm-hmm.
And production, they'll spring stuff on actors like, oh, by the way, we're cutting off your arm today. Are you cool with that? Or we're going to spray your hair white. Are you cool with that? Or we're going to glue your lips to the outside and you won't be able to blink for 3 hours. But, you know, it's going to look great. It's going to look great. And then they look at me like, what exactly are you doing to me? I'm like, I'm just going to take some tape and, you know, it's like, eh. So it's unfortunate when that happens. And it tends to happen sometimes where, you know, on any show where you'll have a bunch of extras. Say like if I have, a perfect example. In The Blacklist, the episode,
See, now this one I don't remember. Okay, it was the Romeo and Juliet episode where the girl, the blonde girl, was in love with the black guy who was the doctor. She, everything she touched died instantly.
Natalie Luca.
Man, you're good. Natalie Luca. We had a shot of all these dead bodies when she's a little girl. She's escaping the hospital. We had all these dead bodies all over the hospital. You only saw like two, but we had all these dead bodies in the hospital. I had 10 people all made up, but none of those people knew that I was putting makeup on them when they came to work that day. They were just showing up.
Oh, wow.
So it was like, oh, shit, we're going to put all this stuff on you. We're going to put this foam out of your mouth and blood out of your eyes. And they get – some people are into it, you know. But then some people, like this one woman, came in completely made up, dressed to the nines, ready to be on camera. And we're like, no, 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 you're playing a dead body, honey. We're just going to throw you on the ground. We're going to put blood on you. You're going to put foam in your mouth and you just be there dead. And, you know, you could sense that they're pissed off.
Mm-hmm.
But, hey, you know, it's Hollywood. You gotta roll with the punches.
That's great. Know?
That makes – that those things make the day hard, you know, because I try to appease everybody. My job is 80% psychological, 20% actual makeup. You have to trust me to touch your face, where in most societies, you don't go around touching people's faces. You know, you'll shake their hand and that's it. But I got to get up in there. You know, I'm on the nose. I'm cleaning out the hair in your ears. I have to make sure there's nothing in your teeth. I'm right in your face. So there has to be a trust level. And if or automatically the actor comes in and they're like pissed because, oh, they didn't tell me I was wearing all this makeup today, automatically I'm the bad guy. So now I have to kind of – what was an easy job now became a hard job because now I have to convince this actor, I'm here to protect you. I'm here to make it easy for you. It sucks that they didn't tell you, but hey, man, let's have some fun with it, mm-hmm. you know? And if you don't, then they'll just hire someone else. What are you going to do?
And how often do you work with like Megan and Diego and the other cast? Because I would think most of your job would be guest stars and supporting characters because they're usually the ones getting shot or hurt.
Oh, no, no. I'm the makeup department head, so I'm in charge of everybody.
Oh, wow.
I delegate. I have a wonderful key. I have a key makeup who is my right hand. Her name is Stephanie Wise. She is my rock. She takes care of all the stuff that I can't take care of because I'm doing the stuff with the meetings. While we're shooting an episode, I already have the script for the next episode. So I'm already planning ahead while we're shooting the one that's playing. And I have two other great makeup artists, Amy Watford and Shannon Dollison. Shannon is delegated to Megan. Stephanie, my key, is delegated to James. I deal with everybody else. And we all switch around. Like if my key makeup Stephanie is ill that day, I do James. Or, you know, someone else can do Megan. But I've trained my team to do every one of our main characters. We have a 9 principal cast from, you know, Spader all the way down to Susan and Ryan,
mm-hmm.
you know? And now that Ryan's back on the show, it's like we just add another character back in, you know what I mean? So it's all these things that I have to delegate who does what, how everybody's makeup looks. When it comes to the effects makeup, when there's blood or a bruise or anything like that, 9 times out of 10 I'll do it, but we shoot a tandem every 8 days. So that means the last 2 days of episode 1, we're already shooting episode 2. And then the last 2 days of episode 2, we're shooting episode 3. So I have to split my team in half every 8 days. So I have to delegate. Okay, today Spader gets you know, some blood on the side of his head from a car crash. So Stephanie, you're going to do that. I'm going to be on the other episode doing the burn makeup on this guy. And then you're going to do some more. And then I'm going to do this. And I'm going to do Diego, Cooper, and Amir. You got this. And then when we have the guest stars come in, 9 times out of 10, they're perfect. They're great. I usually do the guest stars because I geek out. Most of my team, they're younger. So, like, they don't know who Ron Perlman is. Or they don't know who Tony Shalhoub. Or,
shame on them if they don't know who Shalhoub is.
You know what killed me? They didn't even know who Fisher Stevens was.
What?
Come on. The biggest – here's the best one. We had Brent Spiner. I'm not a Star Trek fan. Never was. Probably never will be. Everybody on set was freaking out, loving it. Oh, my God, Brent Spiner. Oh, my God. I was like, hey, how you doing? I did his makeup. I did the little tattoo on the side of his neck. Cool guy. But I was the only guy who didn't geek out. So I think he and I bonded. We got along pretty well. So 9 times out of 10, when we have a guest star and I know who it is immediately, I'm like, oh my God, do you see who we're getting? Who's coming in? And they're like, who's that? I'm like, you know what? You're all dead to me. I can't talk to you right now. Like Fisher Stevens, did nobody see Short Circuit or My Science Project? Or am I just living in the past? I don't get it.
Some people don't deserve to be in entertainment. There's just
it happens more often than you think.
I don't doubt it. There's been so many great actors on there. I mean, Lance Henriksen. Freaking Lance Henriksen. Lance,
you know what? Here's the best story about Lance. Lance was so cool. Everybody was geeking out. They were talking about aliens or Near Dark or whatever. I said, listen, I'm only going to ask you one question about aliens, and that's all I'm going to ask you. He's like, all right, you better make it a good one. I'm like, I got to know. When Bishop was crawling through that little tiny tube to get to the satellite tower, how long were you in that tube? He's like, dude, I was in that tube for 5 hours. And that thing was half a mile long. And he did it for real. Back and forth.
Did he really?
Yeah. I had no idea. I thought it was just like a cool camera shot. Maybe then he said, no, he was crawling in that tube nonstop.
Oh, wow. That's insane.
Yeah. Impressive. It's those little stories that I love to hear from an actor because I try not to geek out because it's unprofessional. You don't want to be like we had Paul Rubens. I mean, it's Pee Wee Herman. You don't meet Pee Wee Herman in normal situations, even in the film industry. But such a nice guy. Mm-hmm. Like we had such a good time. We had known a lot of the same people. We were talking about the movies, talking about the because I grew up on Pee Wee's Playhouse. I asked him, I remember saying to him, like, how did you get your hair to spike up like that? Because one time for Halloween, I wanted to dress up like Pee Wee Herman, but I couldn't get my hair to do that. He goes, oh, that was glued on. That was a hairpiece glued on. And I'm like, really? He goes, yeah. Sorry to burst your bubble. I was like, what? Are you kidding me?
That's fantastic.
So it's like, oh, these little stories that you hear from the actors when you're one-on-one person with them. That's one of the benefits of my job. That's what I think I love about my job. Is that I get to meet such as cool people. You know, there's some really cool people in this industry. You know, I did an episode of Law & Order SVU where I got to work with Mike Tyson. And Mike Tyson is an enigma. He's a great guy, but it's just such a mystery about him. Like, you know, you hear all these things about, you know, Mike Tyson. Mm-hmm. But you don't know Mike Tyson. He's actually sitting in front of you, you know, and you're putting makeup on him. And then by the end of it, we became best friends. I got him to sign my copy of Mike Tyson's Punch-Out for my Nintendo Entertainment.
You're kidding me.
Nope,
that's cool.
Got it framed and everything. Actual cartridge.
That's fantastic. Oh, that's fantastic. Signed your Mike Tyson Punch-Out game.
Totally.
Oh, man.
Well, how about some fan questions? Let's throw these out there at you. Most recently, Anita comes up with the bees, the bee lady. How much did you have involvement with the bees and how did that all work?
Okay, the bee lady is I did the burn scars. There's a shot after the bees all leave her. She smokes them off. She's all scarred from her neck all the way down to her waist. I had actually covered the actress's breasts with the prosthetics and everything, and we had a full set of prosthetics. But being network television, you can't really show any kind of breasts, let alone one that's even covered up. There was no nipple or anything. But I had designed a whole set of prosthetics, and I had worked with the beekeepers and the VFX department because we actually had real bees on set. And on top of that, they had done VFX bees for when they were on top of the actress. There's, if you watch the episode, there's shots of the bees that are real, and then there's shots that are just computer-generated bees. So it was a crazy day. I'll tell you that much. It was a crazy day. We had a lot of bees.
I'm phobic, so I would have quit.
Yeah, we were ready to quit. And I'm not even scared of bees, but we were all just like, this is insane. And, you know, you kind of like, who, you know, the writers come up with it and we try to make it a reality. But sometimes you just got to be like, there's too many bees in set right now. There's just too many bees. I think they had like 2,500 bees.
I was telling Troy, I've been stung like over 100 times when I was a kid. It was real bad. Had a couple bad runs. So just hearing the noise, it like literally triggers something. I couldn't imagine being around that much.
There was a definitive hum on set because we shot that in our soundstage. We didn't go to location. That was an actual set. They built that whole cabin thing.
The hum of the bees was very unnerving, you know, because you're waiting at any minute for those things to just come out and take us all out, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I firmly believe, like, people say you don't want to be against the bees extinction because then the planet would die. But I think I'm okay with it. I'll be honest with you. I'll be all right.
No, we need the bees, but just not on film. We can CGI them now. That's where, you know.
I said that to John and he's just like, oh, but it seemed better. Or something like that. When you know that, Troy?
John was in L.A. He wasn't there.
That's funny. Mary Beth wants to know, how authentic do you make the visuals to match the script? Say, for example, if it is supposed to be, what does it say, adult bones in the briefcase, do you make adult-sized bones? I think somebody's trying to get a clue.
The bones in the briefcase?
Yeah.
I don't do that. That's actually the props department. So as far as like any kind of prop like that, skeletons and corpses and stuff, that's all them. I keep as close to the script as possible. If they say there's a scar over his right eye, or the guy removes his eyeballs or something like that, or the Kenyon family, when they say, okay, and the twigs are sticking out of his eyes, I'm like, okay, that's what we're doing. Twigs out of his eyes. I'm not there to recreate the wheel. I am the writer's paintbrush. They come up with it. I make it happen. I put my flair into it, and I will give them suggestions on what could work better, but I don't redesign anything to suit my own needs. I will tell them, like, listen, this is possible or this is not possible. But as far as realism goes, as I said, my wife's a nurse, so when it comes to any sort of injury or any sort of scarification, I'm on it 100%. Tattoos as well. Any person that has a tattoo on that show, I do all the research behind it. Like this guy's a Aryan white supremacist, like the one that was let go of prison. I forget what the episode was, but they had let the guy, he was all tattoos. And I had researched hundreds of like Nazi tattoos and German tattoos and evil, like, you know, it was awful. My wife looked at me like, the FBI is going to come after you when they see what's on your computer. But, you know, I have to do all the research on this. So I try to keep the realism as close as possible.
That's great.
The Architect with Brent Spiner.
The Architect. Yes, that was the episode where they get the guy out of the prison. See, you're so good at that. And I was there, man. But it's like they become a blur after a while, you know?
He's a robot. He really is a robot.
Store it all in the database. Oldie but a goodie. Now, you weren't there in season one, but how would you have done this effect? Because the Milton Bobbitt episode where he's drinking his mushroom shake underneath the UV lights.
He pulls his nose off.
Pulls off his nose. How does... That's that combination of you have to do some of that, and obviously the VFX have to do a part of that. How does that walk us through that kind of process for that one?
How would I have done that? Now, actually, a friend of mine actually did that makeup. My friend Jeremy Sellenfriend, he does makeup in New York as well, and he worked on season one. So I know he did the makeup. I know they combined VFX with it, but it would have been very similar to, like, obviously I would have made the fake nose, the piece that comes off, and then what's left is the socket. I would have made the edging of the socket of where the nose would be, and it would be like a raised prosthetic, and then they go in and just remove the rest with VFX. What I like to do is give VFX a little something more to work off of. So I would have designed an actual cavity, but it's kind of hard to explain, but it's sort of like reverse imaging. If you look at your nose right now, and I actually painted the tip of your nose black and kind of like put all this gore and gunk and whatnot on there. If you shoot it from a certain angle, instead of it coming outward, it'll look like it's going inward. And it's sort of like a trick, an optical illusion, if you will. So I would have to like kind of paint it and edge it so it looks like, instead of like, if you look at it from the profile, it's a giveaway. You see the nose. But if you look at it almost dead on from a certain angle, I can make it look like that it's actually going inward, you know? And then the VFX guys can go in and fix up the rest. We did an episode like that, the Vem, where the child molester priests they killed the clown.
Yeah,
and they put the hot lead down their throat and everything. So we had to do these whole effects where the lead had burned through their cheeks and through their neck, and the guy's on fire, his stomach's on fire. So we had to do all these effects where I would paint it so it looked like deeper than it really was. And then VFX can go in and scoop out even more. you know? So that's probably how I'd have done Milton Bobbitt. It was relatively, you know, it wasn't too much of a hard idea. It was a good idea. I thought it was a really great episode. I love some of the stuff from season one. They did some great episodes.
That's cool.
Sure did. Do you have to green screen any of that sometimes? Did you paint green specifically?
No, haven't had to do that yet. The VFX guys, the technology has changed now where you don't have to really paint green on anything.
All I have to do is put tracking dots. So I would actually paint like little tiny white circles on the face, and then they go in and create something completely new. You know?
That's interesting.
Yeah, because if we shoot green screen, like we'd have to have the green screen behind them, which is a whole nother hassle. You know, you got grips, electric, lighting, camera, all that. But if they go in with just tracking marks, then the VFX guys have all the tools they need now. The technology is incredible what they can do.
Rob wants to know, are there things that you would like to do but cannot because of, you know, budget constraints and that sort of thing? If so, name one or two of them that you would like to do.
On the Blacklist? Oh. You know what? Someone asked me this question years ago. Okay, it's not so much the budget. The budget is pretty good when it comes to me because if they write it, then I got to make it happen. Simple as that. Mm-hmm. But it's the time constraint is always the problem because if we get the script and then we're shooting this effect 2 days later, it's just impossible to actually make something from scratch in 2 days, depending on what it is. But if I wanted to do something for this show, what I would really like to do, well, I'll give you two. One of them is I want to do some sort of like we've done outbreaks before, like an outbreak, and they kind of like we did the one with the front back in season two. And the idea is that there was this scope of half the world is in an outbreak. Oh my God, everybody's going and going and going. But they didn't really convey that because you can't. It's a television show. You only have only 44 minutes to tell the story. But I want to do a scene where I have at least 100 background in some really messed up outbreak type sickness makeup. Everybody's vomiting and pustules, just a complete horror show. Sort of like I want to bring back the Halloween episode. You know, mm-hmm. Roseanne used to do it the best. They don't do Halloween episodes that much anymore.
Hallelujah.
I want Halloween episode. And we aired during October. I like to think that the Mombasa Cartel was our Halloween episode because it was the one that aired right before Halloween. But then that was it. We don't have that anymore. So I want a Halloween episode. I want something that's completely nightmarish or a hallucinating dream sequence that's really in depth, you know, with like goblins and monsters and zombies and whatnot. The closest thing we ever get to that are like illnesses, but we don't get anything really graphic. Something fun like that, you know?
Really, the closest you probably would have gotten would have been Frederick Barnes in season one, where he goes into the courtroom and then locks everybody in there with the canisters.
Right, but you don't get to see any of it, veins. Right? Yeah, but see, that's all just veins and stuff because that's a time constraint. So you can't really get into the meat. You can't make a Walking Dead episode in 2 days, you know? And ideally, I would like to have an episode like that. The other thing I would really like to do is do sort of like a... It's not really like a Benjamin Button type thing, but someone where like an accelerated aging makeup where someone's like really falling apart, you know, like all of a sudden they get older and older and older, like a genetic disorder or something like that. I think that would be a lot of fun to do because it's something that could show a real scope of makeup. But of course, time constraints, that's what it all comes down to. Like we had an episode. Oh, my God. That one, I don't even remember the name, but it was the guy sitting in a chair. And they're doing these tests on him, but he's dying, and he starts bubbling and pustules, everything like that. And it was on a ship. See, we've had so many people who are sick on the show. So
That would have been Adrian Shaw, part one.
Jeez, Adrian Shaw, yeah, the doctor. You're absolutely right.
How do you
right.
know that, you freak?
See, all I gotta do is give you one clue, and boom, you got it.
How do you know that? Okay, it's insane.
I'll just to further elaborate on that question. One episode I really liked doing was the Crispin Crandall one with all the frozen bodies.
Yeah.
Because the kicker is we had done 20 frozen bodies, but you only saw two, you know, because of time constraints. It's what they shot. It's what they show. Mm-hmm. The guy getting his thumb cut off and all that stuff. So, like, I like doing big scope, huge background type gigs where I can hire a bunch of my friends and we all come in and just sling makeup and everybody gets done. But, you know, you got to work with what you got. So it's not so much a budget constraint as it is time constraints.
Gotcha.
Marilyn here said, what do they use for blood and how do you make it ooze on command?
What do we use for blood? We use all different types of blood, theatrical blood. You can purchase it. We don't make blood because it's so much easier to just buy it. But blood usually consists of things like Karo syrup, dish soap, food dye, and whatnot. As far as it oozing on command, it really depends on the shot. Okay, for example, Cooper, when he thought he was dying, and I had to make his nose bleed. So something as subtle as that was a very intricate makeup because I'm sitting there with a giant turkey baster type syringe, and I'm right behind Harry Lennox, and they roll cameras. Everybody's ready to go. The cameras are rolling. I roll up. I squirt a little bit right inside his nose, and then I run off set, run off camera, roll camera. The blood starts leaking out his nose. He wipes it. He crashes down to the ground. Cut, clean it up, start over, do it again. So oozing on command is pretty much me standing right behind camera, ready to go with a syringe, run in, squirt it, and get out. And as it's dripping, I get out. Gaia, same thing. He pulled these giant cotton things out of his nose at the beginning. He's living in the bus.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
And so we called this. He really did. That actor really shoved all that cotton up his nose. I don't know how, but he was like, because we were like, we can cut it, we can make it short. He's like, no, man, I'm going to do it. I'm like, you're going to do it? He's like, yeah. He's like, all right, go for it, man. Knock yourself out. He did it, man. He put it all the way up. And I couldn't even believe it. But I had to sit there and drop blood on the leaves and like little shots like that. It's usually 9 times out of 10, me running in, squirting a little blood. Or if it's more elaborate, the special effects guys will come in with blood tubing. And they'll run tubes and they'll squirt blood out of weed sprayers and air compressors and whatnot. They do all the bullet hits on the show. So anytime someone gets shot, that's all them. You know, getting shot in the arm, getting shot, all the gunshots in the show.
That's pretty cool.
It's crazy. It's a crazy day.
But really, I'm going to read this exactly as Troy wants me to read it. My God, man. But really, the most important question comes from Linda. How hard is it to transform red into a man every single week?
Oh my God!
Bum, ba-dum, bum,
that was
bum.
Linda's question, by the way.
Yeah, but
how hard is it to transform Reddington into a man?
Yeah, because he's technically, Katarina.
I don't see
such a
Katarina.
Dip.
I think Katarina's in the water, man. I can't say what I think per se because I don't know. Like I have all my theories are based off what you guys have said because you guys have brought things to light that I never even considered. I'm like, oh my God, that's right. That makes sense. Because unfortunately, even though I'm actually part of the team, I don't remember the episodes as far back as you guys do. So when you say something like, well, Katarina did this in this episode, I'm like, holy shit, he's right. I didn't even think of that. And then I'll actually go back and watch it and be like, oh, wow. So maybe he is the mom. Maybe he's not the mom. I think it's still a toss up, but as far as the question, I mean, Reddington comes in ready to go. I'll leave it at that.
Because he's already a man, baby. Yeah,
he's already he comes in ready for camera. He walks in, he's ready to go.
My important question is: since you worked on the Amazing Spider-Man movies, can we agree Andrew Garfield was a pretty damn good Spider-Man?
I agree. I have a love for the Tobey Maguire movies though because I love Sam Raimi.
Me too.
So,
me too.
I'm excited for the new Spider-Man. So
are you? I mean, I know you work for Sony.
He's finally part of the Avengers. And be honest with you, I'm really sick of origin stories of Spider-Man. We all know at this point how he was made. Let's just get to Spider-Man.
Well, that's the most important question. Mechanical or organic webs?
I'm still with organic. That's what it was in the comics, man. He was bitten and,
In the comics, it was mechanical. Yeah, he built it.
I'm sorry.
He
was mechanical in the comics.
Mm-hmm.
Shit, I'm wrong. I'm still with the fact that it should be organic because I don't believe a high school student has the wit to put together something of Tony Stark level shooting webs, especially in his mom's house his aunt's house.
The thing I don't want, Uncle Ben is the guy that leads him, not Peter, or not Tony Stark. I'm worried there's going to be too much Tony Stark. It's going to be like Peter Starker, and I don't want that. I want Peter Parker.
No, but they're doing that. The only reason you know he's in the movie is to help sell the movie.
Yeah, you know? I know, but that's it makes me worried.
It's the same reason why all the Marvel movies has to have someone from another movie, because they need to tie it all together for the Infinity Wars. So that's all it is. You know, Tony Stark's in there because he's contracted to do a certain amount of movies. Same reason why Nick Fury was in all those movies, just to get him in the movie, you know. fans of because they're taking a chance on an unknown actor for a Spider-Man. So that's why they surround him with a bunch of stars, especially Robert Downey Jr. Oh, Iron Man's in the movie. I'm going to go see it. And you know there's a big battle scene with him and Spider-Man, so you got to have it for the diehards. Because to bet a whole Marvel movie on a nobody is a big risk for them, you know?
Yeah, it is. You're right. I don't like it, but you're right.
That's the business side of it. It's always the business first. The fans, we get the last end of it, but the business part of it is you can't sell a movie like that. It's a perfect example of Predator, Predator 2. Predator is a great movie, but then you put Danny Glover, who's a great actor. He's not a leading man.
Yeah.
You put him in with the Predator, and you surround him with a bunch of nobodies, except stands for Bill Pullman, but then you go to the movie just to see the Predator. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it still didn't do well because you can't sell it. If Arnold Schwarzenegger made a cameo in Predator 2, boom, moneymaker. It's the same thing with Ghostbusters. If they had called it Ghostbusters 3 instead of Ghostbusters again with the girls,
mm-hmm.
that movie would have made twice as much money.
You think so, huh?
Absolutely, because it would have been the original crew. You would have gotten Venkman and Stance and everybody in there, and they would have handed the torch.
Yep, I agree with that.
Instead of just being a whole new thing. Because we already have the Ghostbusters lineage. You can't change it. And then you can't change the lineage and make it new and then throw in things like Slimer and the Stay Puffed balloon and all that. You can't throw throwbacks from the original movie because you made it a new movie, but you're still giving it an homage. So it made no sense.
And have the original actors playing different roles. That's just
different roles on top of it. It's like you threw them in there just for nothing. And then you put – if you left early, you never would have seen Ernie Hudson. You know, so it's like if you had had the original Ghostbusters, I would have believed that, yeah, they're older, they're tired, Spengler's dead, you know, from a ghost or whatever, and we're passing the torch. We're trained. If it was a training movie, you know, let's train them, you know, and they can go out and be Ghostbusters. Oh, man, it would have been amazing.
I don't know. I like that movie. I like it too.
But if you're a video game fanatic, I highly recommend playing Ghostbusters the video game, because that's actually the third Ghostbuster movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the one that came out a few years back, right?
Yeah, it came out for Xbox and PlayStation. Yeah, that was the original. That was the next Ghostbusters. But, you know, I digress.
No, that's cool that you still geek out over this stuff. Going back to my question like a while back. That's something that I really just feel I was always concerned with. Like if you work in the business and you work and you see it regularly and you see makeup and you see prosthetics and you're working with this every day, it feels like it would make you somewhat disillusioned, but you're still invested in it. You seem you're still geeking out over this stuff.
Oh, how can I not? I mean, it's sort of like a dream job. I mean, I only wish I was doing this in the 80s when, you know, the really cool movies were out. Like I would have loved to have worked on Back to the Future or even The Thing or Big Trouble in Little China, you know, the movies that I hold dear to my heart. I'm fortunate enough now that New York City is a television industry, so I'm getting to meet a lot of the actors that I grew up with. But in the television world, it's a cop show. I mean, it's a fed cop show. There's bullets and stuff. It's a great job. I'm fortunate enough to do makeups that are above network, in the sense that I'm getting to do like really disturbing makeups, like twigs out of someone's eyes or mummified bodies in the woods, things that you normally wouldn't see a lot of on a quote unquote procedural show, mm-hmm. you know, unless it's a medical show. So I love The Blacklist. I think it's a great avenue for me to do sort of like the horror aspect of makeup without actually being cheesy horror movies. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Totally.
You know, I've told this numerous times to anybody who will listen on the set of The Blacklist that what we need on this show is a League of Doom episode where all of the blacklisters that are still alive figure out that Reddington is squawking to the cops and they all join forces to come get him.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be awesome.
Then you get like 10 of the hardest blacklisters that we haven't killed.
and they all get together and use their resources to get at Reddington. I would love that. I would geek out with that stuff because it's like, oh, did you see that? They brought back this guy and they brought back Wu Jing and they brought back General Ludd and whoever's not dead, anybody else not dead. I don't know who's not dead, but all those people, get them all together and they all come at Reddington at once and it becomes a new type of cabal.
I love that. I love that idea. John, listen.
I've said that to John personally and he liked it too, but you know, it's got to be in the cards. It's got to be in the cards. I don't write the show. I just work on it.
That would be great. I gotta be scream out, "Blacklisters assemble," or something like that.
Seriously, I mean, people would go nuts, and it would give the audience a reason to go back to watch those origin episodes of each Blacklister. It's the same reason why the Marvel movies are doing so well, since they're all connected. You feel that you can't just watch Guardians, or you can't just watch Ant-Man or Thor without going back and seeing, oh, did you see that they mentioned Thor's hammer at the end of Iron Man 2? Or they mentioned this and they tied this together. Nick Fury's here. And, you know, it's like all that connection is what the fans love. You know, it's not just about a 2-hour movie anymore. You go in, you see it, you're done. Okay, put it on the shelf. You know, but the Marvel Universe is so smart the way it's tying it all together. I only wish DC can get on it, you know, because I was a big DC fan when I grew up. You know, they just need to stop recasting Batman and Superman and lock someone down.
I think Superman's good for a little bit. I don't know about Batman, though. Ben Affleck seems a little – he's like wavering a little bit. He doesn't know where he wants to stay or not.
It just wasn't a strong story. I mean, there's so many brilliant comics out there with Superman and Batman. I would be okay if they just took off one of the comics. You know, they don't need to try and make this new story. They just need to, you know, come up with something that's – smart enough to, because I mean, the Justice League cartoon, I was there every Saturday, watched it every single Saturday.
Were you?
I loved it. But I have no faith now. I haven't even seen Wonder Woman yet.
Which, oh, it's great. It's great.
Is fantastic.
It? Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, I got to see it. And do they at least do a tie into the next ones, the Justice League movies, or like they set up Aquaman and Flash and all that?
Minimum. I wouldn't say a tie into it, but they do illustrate the modern day versus the years have gone by, so
okay.
I don't want to say too much because I don't want
to
spoil.
Don't say too much. Yeah, I'm gonna try and get my ass to the theater at some point. I got to see it.
So what do you do when you're not doing makeup effects? When you're working on, I know we got to wrap the interview up, but what do you do when you're not working on the Blacklist?
Well, right now I'm on hiatus. We ended the show May 24th, and I do what's called day playing. Like I'll get a call and I'll work on a couple of shows. I just worked on the President's Show for Comedy Central with a friend of mine who does the makeup. Mm-hmm. And like I'm have Brush Will Hire. I'm an independent contractor. But the majority of the time I actually am nesting right now because I have a kid coming. So I just painted the nursery and built a crib and get all that ready. And I'm a video game nut. I actually built an arcade machine in my house, like an actual 7-foot coin-op arcade that plays over 8,000 different games. So it's like I spend time as a hobby playing with that thing, tweaking it or setting it up, making it work. What else do I do? You know, landscaping. I work around the house and, you know, I just chill because after 21 years of doing makeup, you always have to look for your next job. It's crazy because, you know, you never know where your next check's coming from. Mm-hmm. And where I'm very fortunate with the Blacklist is I know come July 24th or whenever it is we come back to work, you know, I have a job for another 10 months. So I can chill out and enjoy my summer a little bit, you know?
Awesome.
That's what I like to do.
Well, Anthony, thank you so much for being on, dude. I know this has been like a dream of ours to talk to people from New York after 4 seasons. So fantastic for the fans and just so cool that you listen to us, too. Very flattered. So that's awesome.
I often joke at work where I think I'm the only person that actually watches the show because it's on Thursday nights. It's 10 o'clock. By the time we get home, we're asleep. We got to be at work the next morning, but I will watch it. Diego and I will watch it. And the next morning we talk about it and the ratings and, oh, this was great. And this was, you know, we like this. We didn't like this. Cause once we see the show and then when I discover that this app, the Blacklist app, cause I was just Googling Blacklist, and you guys came up, I was hooked immediately because I had listened to another podcast about Blacklist and I realized they didn't know what the hell they were even talking about. Like they didn't know the character names or they didn't know this or that. And I'm like, these guys actually watch the show. And normally, if I wasn't part of the Blacklist crew, I wouldn't watch it, you know, because it's just one of those shows that if you don't watch it from the beginning, you're out. You know, you can't catch up unless you have 80 plus hours of time to sit around and watch TV.
Mm-hmm.
So finding the app was a godsend because I could actually watch the show. And what really drives me nuts sometimes is that you guys don't post it till Saturday, but we air Thursday. So Friday, my drive into work, I got nothing. So I'm like, oh God, when are they going to get back? And then I'll forget on Saturday and then I won't listen to it till like Sunday or Monday. So it's one of those things. I'm like, I got to continuously catch up with the podcast. The interview you guys did with Susan mm-hmm. was brilliant.
Thank you.
And she was so good. And the one you did with Amir, the next day I talked to Amir. I was like, dude, I heard your interview. It was great. I talked to Megan. I heard your interview. They're all great. You guys do some great interviews and you ask the right questions, you know? Even the one with Hisham was great too. I love all the interviews you guys do. You guys need to get Diego on there, but he's going to be a hard sell. He doesn't like doing interviews.
Why? We're fun. And
I know. And I'll
tease him about his hair.
I know Diego, and he's not up for that shit. He's got a wife and a kid, and he likes to do his family thing. He doesn't like doing interviews. But you know what the get is? You need to get James. If you can get James, like the.
Okay. We'll call him.
Well, you never know. It could be like the last, like the day that the show finally meets its end and it's the last episode, mm-hmm. you know, and it'll be your last podcast. You never know, right?
No, you never know. I mean, don't like we would tell him no. I'll be honest with you. I always tell Troy this. If James Spader came on, I would probably ask him so many questions that have nothing to do with the Blacklist because I'm a fan of his entire body of work. It's not That's just true.
So. You know? But yeah, like you can get all those guys. Like, you know, Glenn. You should get Glenn on there.
We would love to have Glenn. I would love to have Megan again, just because it still floors me how she actually came back to us just because of one thing we did. That I mean, it just shows she's such a sweet person.
She really is, and she's a genuine person, and I love her to death. And it was crazy at first when I met her because I was like, oh my God, the lead actress. But we bonded real quick. It was all about her scar at first. Because in season one, they had designed the scar on her wrist a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And she wasn't a big fan of the whole prosthetic glue thing. So I had to come up with a way to make it as painless as possible for her. And we had gone through maybe three or four variations of the scar, which is why some fans will actually notice that the scar moved a little bit. I saw it online years ago. Someone called me out on it saying, hey, the scar used to be on her palm and now it's on her wrist. And I'm like, well, you know what? Scars heal over time. That's my excuse. And the practicality of it is that if you put any kind of makeup on a joint, like a wrist, it's not going to stay. And let's be honest. You want me to chase this scar around for the next 8 hours? Megan don't want that, and I don't want that. So let's just, you know, make it easier for everybody. That's why it's there, but you never always see it.
Mm.
But we know it's there.
That's great.
So, yeah. But listen, thank you guys again. I really enjoyed this. I can't wait to hear it.
Well, absolutely. And hopefully you can come back maybe sometime next season too.
Yeah. If I still have a job, then yeah, I'm down.
You'll be good. You'll
be fine. Yeah,
absolutely. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thanks for coming by, man. Really appreciate it, Anthony.
All right. Have a good night, guys. Bye-bye.
Have a good night.
Doctor Who fans, sci-fi aficionados, and general supporters of time travel the world over, after listening to this podcast, please check out our fellow Golden Spiral Media podcast devoted to the hit BBC show, Doctor Who, hosted by...
Well, hosted by us, David Ward and Wayne Henderson.
And whether you're a new fan or an old hunk of coal like me, this is the show for you.
And not taking time travel into account, I've been watching Doctor Who for almost 5 Earth years.
And frighteningly enough, I know that I've been watching Doctor Who since the 4th of January, 1982.
And since the 10th incarnation of the Doctor advised us to never blink, David, you entitled this GSM Doctor Who podcast, Don't Blink.
That's exactly right. So join us and other Don't Blink listeners on Apple Podcasts or Android.
And of course, at don'tblinkpodcast.com. And remember,
don't blink. Don't even blink.
Believe it or not, there's actually more to this interview, and we have the director's cut, the extended edition on Aaron's The Hollywood Outsider television and film podcast. That's right, thehollywoodoutsider.com. Go head over there and you can hear an extended 20 minutes of this interview where we talk about movies that are being remade and should they be remade and other things going on in Hollywood. Check that out again, thehollywoodoutsider.com, and look for the Anthony Pepe interview over there.
All right. Hope you guys enjoyed the interview. Troy, anything you want to say in closing in terms of the interview?
I just want to say thanks again for Anthony for listening, for being a fan of the show, but more importantly, all the great work he's done since season two. Just fantastic stuff, and can't wait to see what he's got cooked up for season five, because, you know, Red's broke. It's a new Red, I think, next season, so it's going to be interesting to see what they can do and what they come up with.
I just want to thank him for coming on. That was a lot of fun, great conversation. I love people that can just talk movies and TV and intelligently without actually devolving into or anything. I mean, he's just really good guy to talk to, and wishing the best of luck. Thank you for all the work you do, man. I really appreciate it. Troy will be the first one to tell you, I love behind the scenes of film and television. I love the art of it, the craft of it. And anytime I can get more information and more insight into that process, it really just makes me giddy as a fan. So thanks so much for coming by.
Agree.
All right. Well, that's going to conclude this episode. Be sure to follow us on Twitter. We're at the Blacklist GSM, because sometimes you may see some tweets about our other projects we do over the summer. Again, that's at the Blacklist GSM.
Don't forget to follow us on Tumblr, Instagram, and join our Facebook group. Just search for the Blacklist Exposed. Talk about the show, the podcast, or share your favorite visual effect from the show. Anthony might see it.
You can also subscribe to the podcast and Apple Podcasts. We're also on Google Play or listen from the website. But if you're really on the go, like Anthony apparently is, make sure you download our app for iOS and Android powered by Spreaker. You will also find all the intel and analysis about this episode by visiting theblacklistexposed.com. Big thanks for listening. Don't forget, we have more episodes this month just to say thanks for helping us out in the Podcast Awards. Again, that's podcastawards.com. You only get to submit one ballot, so remember, the Blacklist Exposed for entertainment, Beyond Westworld for TV and film. And if you're kind enough, for Troy, Packers Fan Podcast and Sports.
Thanks for listening, guys. We'll see you soon. Until next time, I'm Agent Troy Heinrichs. That's at Troy Heinrichs on Twitter. And if you want to learn more about me, just visit, well, about.me/Troy Heinrichs.
And I'm Agent Aaron Peterson. You can hear me talking about movies and TV on the Hollywood Outsider podcast, as well as Remake This Movie Right. We are available at thehollywoodoutsider.com or on Twitter at @H_Outsider. Be sure to subscribe, download the app, submit your feedback, but most importantly, keep yourself off of
the Blacklist.
The Blacklist Exposed is a Golden Spiral Media production. Find more of our great podcasts at goldenspiralmedia.com/podcasts.